My name is Ken Erickson, and the topic today is listed on the board, Your Power in Criticism and Praise. Someone asked after Monday's session, what was the source of the material? Was there a book in relation to Who Do You Know? And there is none. There is a gleam in the eye. I'm working on something in communication for Concordia, but that, you know, until they say, here's a contract, you never know. So, but then someone said, have you other things you've written? And the topic today comes from one of the books, so I did list them here because I said, please let us know. And one is, Please, Lord, Untie My Tongue. That was quick untying, wasn't it? And it's helpful and unhelpful things to say and do when visiting sick, bereaved, divorced, and imprisoned. It came out of a feeling of inadequacy. You know, what do I do? So in studying it, I checked with a lot of people who are more expert in that. This is the power of praise. We'll deal with that today, or the general topic. And then the recent one is Christian time management. You may remember Matins this morning. It was really on that topic. I don't have enough time. And I just wanted to share one thought, which it really sticks with me. It comes from an old grandfather's clock, I'm told. And it says in relation to time, we always have time for those things we put first. Yeah. And you know, when we don't have time for prayer, we don't have time for devotions, we don't have time to go and visit somebody and such, we really have to say, hey, I'm not putting that thing first. Okay, today there's a biblical basis in relation to the topic of particularly praise, power of praise. And I put them up here. One is Proverbs 3:27. Anyone have that in their mind? That's not a fair question unless you really have it. Now, let's see. Proverbs has a little bit different than that, huh? Do what?
Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due. When it is due, your power
to do it. Good. Do not, emphasis, do not withhold good to those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Right. And the other one who was bringing that up, that was from Philippians 4:8, right?
Do whatever it is. I don't know
if anyone has that one right now or not. Do you? Philippians 4:8.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things.
Good, good. Think about these, if there's any, and I kind of underline the word any, if there's any excellence, if there is anything underlined worthy of praise, think about these things. And that's difficult to do when what are the headlines in the newspaper and the news on the television when you turn on? Chaos. But here we're told if there's anything worthy of praise to think about these things. We know what affirming people means, I believe. Being a positive statement, helpful. I've used the word infirm as the opposite of affirm. I don't think it's always meant to be used that way. But if I'm infirm, I'm not really up to par. We can infirm people. You can almost make them less than they are by infirming. So the first thing I want to do is to introduce a little sketch right here. Shows a balance, and it says it's got three kind of bricks on this side with pluses on them. Got one brick on that side with a minus on it. Anything wrong with that balance? What's wrong?
It's
okay. We only have one here, and it's lower than this one that has three. Okay, we're talking about various words that are positive or negative, that affirm or infirm. And I went through the synonyms and the dictionaries and all that, looking for all the positive terms we might be able to use. And I found 21 positive choices, including such things as approving, appreciating, commending, congratulating, encouraging, praising, humoring, and so on. But while I found 21 on the positive side, I found 48 on the negative, including such words as belittling, berating, calling down, castigating, censuring, criticizing, depreciating, negating, neglecting, laughing at, rejecting, reprimanding, slighting, telling off, tongue lashing, upbraiding. Lots more words on one side than another. Now, so you said, hey, this doesn't look right because I have one negative and it's heavier, it looks like, than three positives. Do we react that way to negatives and positives?
Sure.
Leo Basaglia wrote one time, people can tell us all day long that we are wondrous and marvelous, and we are worthy of all kinds of things. Then one person will tell us he doesn't like us, and we are destroyed. I'm going to do a seminar tomorrow in Olympia. After these seminars, it's out of Oregon State, each person gets an evaluation slip. Let's assume that there are 30 people there, and let's assume that 29 of the evaluations are, you know, good or better. But let's assume that one is, you know, very negative. What will catch my attention tomorrow night? Yeah, who was that? What was wrong? And so on. We tend to dwell on that. And since there are so many, and since these positive things happen so seldom, you can see that where one negative, if there are no positives, can probably be even worse, one criticism. Okay, I have a what if question. What if you praised two people today, and that each of them praised two people tomorrow? How many people would be praised in 7 days? Anybody guess that one? In 7 days, 120, huh? Okay, in 14 days? Not quite fair to ask you that, unless you got a calculator, I guess. 16,000? Now that's if each person, you know, who received it the next day did two more. 21 days? 2 million? It's fanciful, I guess, but the sad thing is, what if you criticize, like they say, you kick the dog and all that. What if you're negative toward somebody and they are negative toward two others and so on? The same type of a progression occurs. Now maybe you can see why I have the word up here. Power, huh? And your power. Depending on how we act and you know, treat other people, we may have a lot more influence down through and around the country than we realize. They say that a teacher never knows where his or her influence stops. They can affect eternity. And I think that's true for the good teachers, and maybe true for those who are critical also. Any comments or questions that triggers for you?
Oh, it just brings to mind, with those figures there, if we would speak to one person every day about the Lord, how that would, Christianity would blossom.
Okay, you've turned it in another direction. Say if we would even talk to one person about the Lord each day, and they would continue that, what would happen? Good point. Okay, we're going to wind up today in time for lunch. And also, I'm going to try to leave about 10 minutes at the end for a lab exercise. That sounds kind of tough. What I'm thinking of there, I hope, if this is at all effective today, that some of you will be willing to write a note of appreciation to some of the individuals that I have some names of, who are, shall we say, behind the scenes here at the village, and who never really get any recognition. They aren't seen by others, but do an important job. Well, we'll wait and see whether you're willing to do that at the end, some of you. Okay, a few infirming examples. And the first one would be a parent's ignoring a child's accomplishments. And this came out of Joyce Landorf's book, Irregular People. Some of you may have read that. I enjoyed it very much. She tells of parents who never attended any of their daughter's swim meets. They ignored the fact that she broke all swimming records in most events her first year in high school. Later, as a senior, she became the secretary to both her class and the student body, but at no time did either parent acknowledge her accomplishments. Reviewing this time in her life, the daughter said, "I tried so hard to make my parents see that I was capable. And in my studies, I find, I think, more times I have troubles with fathers giving recognition than mothers." Now, that's not a scientific study, but from what I found. When she won the title of homecoming queen her senior year, she recalled thinking, "Now they'll be proud of me." But her mother's only comment was, "I guess it pays to be cheap with the boys." You know, to avoid disabling children, parents must be eternally vigilant, considering the lasting consequences of the words they speak. Others have told me that they have heard from their parents, kind of, they didn't eavesdrop, but parents didn't know they were listening. One say to another, "That one shouldn't have been born." Or something like, "You are so dumb." That sticks probably throughout life in a situation like that. Okay, what about teachers? Tremendous influence potential there. Another situation, a friend of mine gave this information to me. "My single most infirming event occurred in third grade when my teacher handed back a paper and told me there was a mistake on it. A successful professional businesswoman, she is now, and she was sharing this with me. Her voice quavered, however, with emotion as she recounted this experience of many years ago. "I was to find the mistake and correct it. When I couldn't find the error, the teacher became incensed and accused me of being stubborn and arrogant. I was punished by missing every recess until I found and corrected my error. This went on for days before she gave in and showed me my mistake. I had used THERE instead of THEIR. To her, this was probably a minor frustration. To me, at 8 years, well, I came to believe that I must really be stupid not to find an error my teacher thought was so obvious. The scenarios changed as I grew older, but I felt this same situation many times because of the previous experience. The lingering effects of such infirming seem unshakable." And then parents can have unrealistic expectations for their children. When I was a high school principal, I remember one day when a mother came into the office. She kind of burst in, had a lot on her mind, and she started talking. Her major concern was that her daughter was not doing as well as she thought her daughter should do. And so I didn't know the girl well. I got the counseling records and I looked at them. I got a hold of the counselor. I talked to the counselor and such. And all indications we had was that the girl was doing as well as could be expected. We tried to explain this carefully to the mother. And she got the point, but she couldn't accept the point. And finally she said, "Well, Maybe I could accept the fact that my daughter is average, but I will never accept the fact that she is below average. Now the sad part is that 50% of all the children in the world are below average. Whoever we are in this room, 50% of us are below average and 50% of us are above the average in this room. And to say that, you know, I can't accept that my child that's below average is saying half the children in the world would be rejected. And yet we have something about the term below average. I've seen a San Francisco newspaper headline, San Francisco schools below average. Well, in the nation, half the schools are below the middle and half of them are above. And you know, everybody probably wants to be up above. And we put tremendous expectations on our children to get into some of the, quote, best universities. And what do we find in the best universities? The suicide rate is higher than in other universities and tends to be going up. You know, I hit the honor roll a couple of times in high school and college, but then when the Navy got a hold of me, they sent me to the Graduate Business School at Harvard, along with CPAs and attorneys and all these other people. Where was I on the list? I think I was below average on that list. But we don't realize that the competition can get more difficult and we have unrealistic expectations. Now, realistic expectations and high expectations are good. I'm only talking about those that are unrealistic with the facts. Okay, I've got a question here. What is intergenerational infirming? Anybody guess what I mean by intergenerational infirming?
Father and mother to the children.
Father and mother to the children, and then the children to the grandchildren, and such as that. Yeah, that's correct. I have an interesting situation with a fellow who's a very prominent person in our state. In state government, and he explains it this way. He says that this infirming cycle is hard to break within a family. He said, I didn't become an infirmer because of any direct abuse from Dad. His attacks were directed either at himself or at the one he loved most, his wife. No matter how perfect a family meal or how special it might have been, seldom could he give a compliment to my mom. And as hard as they worked in their business over the years, nothing was ever quite enough as my dad viewed it. And most of the time, he was nearly as hard on himself as he was on mom. It seemed to me that if he had been able to accept himself and God's forgiving love, he would not have needed to ridicule and put down others the way he did. I vowed I would never follow or duplicate his example. Yet it showed its influence in our marriage, particularly through the first 10 years. I found myself putting my wife down just as my dad had done to my mother. More frustrating yet, we observed our son in the early years of his marriage, and the same patterns tend to emerge. Fortunately, my wife and I reached a point some years ago where we could begin to talk about it. But oh, how deep the scars were that I hardly knew existed. It has been only in recent years that we've been able to discuss and share these heartaches of our marriage without both of us to some extent coming apart. Because we were fortunate enough to spot some of the problems, we decided to discuss them with our kids early in their marriage. We hoped they could become aware of their inheritance and discontinue some of the infirming patterns now affecting their lives. I think it has been helpful. Now they are aware of some of their legacies going back as far as their grandfather. Yet, if it weren't for the Lord's love working in our lives, it's probable the infirming cycle of destructive behavior would continue to recur in future generations. Another kind of a example of that comes closer to home. My mother had six brothers before she had a young sister. Of course, living on a farm, there were no television, things like that. What was one of the major pastimes, I guess? Teasing. You know, you have fun teasing. Teasing is usually more fun to the teasers than the teasees. And you never not quite know what it's like until you're kind of on the receiving end. Well, I don't know if that's a type of intergenerational infirming, but I did receive a lot of teasing. And I'm still sensitive. Still a button that's easily pushed. And I remember as a kid, I couldn't say chrysanthemum and linoleum correctly. And so when we had company, what did they say? Ken, say linoleum and chrysanthemum. And then they're, you know, about it.
But,
what? Yeah, aluminum probably belongs in there too, yeah. These things kind of hurt, but the teasing has come down. Now, in our particular situation, I also vowed not to laugh in our own family at anyone, but it was so easy to slip into the familiar patterns I had lived with and experienced. On occasions, I found myself teasing Lois. And then it would really hurt afterwards because I knew how she felt from how I felt. So these things kind of have to be observed, talked about, prayed about, and really continual care and observation, or they tend to go on generation after generation. Okay, sometimes there seems to be kind of a natural reluctance to affirm other people. There's a study that was done nationally many years ago. Many bosses, well, first, workers were given a list of 10 things that would affect their jobs and asked to rank order them. Then the bosses were given the same list and asked to rank order them as they thought the workers would rank order them. They're trying to read the workers' minds. Huh? One of the factors is appreciation for good work. Where do you think the workers ranked it?
10.
On a list from 1 is most important and 10 at the bottom. What? I hear a number of some ones, and that is correct. Workers ranked it 1. Where did the bosses rank it when they thought how the workers would see it? Well, not quite, but it was 8. Then this was repeated many, many years later. And you think, well, now people are smarter, we know better. The relationship was the same. It's kind of like, how dumb can we be, to ignore facts when we check them out like that? Here's a little phrase, a Welsh proverb. If thou wouldst have praise, one word is missing. What word do you think might be missing? Sorry?
Love.
No, if thou wouldst have praise, there's another word.
Okay.
What?
Give praise.
No. In this proverb, it's a different one. I'll put it on here for you. If thou wouldst have praise, die, is the proverb. Think about that. When my Uncle Edgar died, went to the funeral, and he's a fine person, all the great things people remembered about Edgar. And they were, appropriate. But I wonder how much Edgar heard about that while he was still alive. Isn't it pretty much the same where you are, that the funerals are kind of the praise times when it's kind of too late? Okay, well, any other comments in this area before we move ahead? Yes?
A lot of people will praise you to someone else, but not to you.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, and they praise you to someone else, but they don't tell you. A couple of things. Some feel, well, maybe they'll get the big head. Well, I don't, many people get a chance to get a big head that way, I don't think. And I remember another situation of a young lady, a girl who worked with her father, and her father never praised her. And she said, I worked like a man. I worked harder than I should have out there in the fields and logging and all that. Never did he give any praise at all. And then one day a neighbor came by and he did praise her, or told the neighbor that she had done a good job. And oh, she got so excited, you know, and she worked harder and worked harder. But then it went back down again. She never, never heard it from her father. So you're right, that happens sometimes, and better than nothing possibly, but nothing like hearing it directly. Okay, let's see, what have we got next here? Some affirming examples. We've been kind of on the negative side. Let's move over to the positive side. Again, I think teachers come into the act often, at least my experience. Bess Curry, high school physics teacher of mine. I think it's safe to say, maybe you'd be mad at Bess Curry. I was going to say I wouldn't be here if it weren't for Bess Curry. But she was a tremendous influence in my life. She'd give me extra work to do. I was kind of a shy student. And she'd have me in mornings and after school to help out with things. And then she had my confidence completely. And then she said, Ken, you ought to go to college. You know, no one in the family's ever been to college. Now, you ought to go to college, though. So I think if it weren't for Bess Curry, my life would be a different life. And I often think, you know, bless the memory of the Bess Currys in our life. Probably have some teachers that affected you positively also in that way. She had high expectations, and she let people know. She had high expectations for all her students. Then, when I was probably adolescent, early years, I mowed lawns to make some money. It was 50 cents a lawn in those days. However, my aunt and uncle had a corner lot, and they paid me 75 cents. And I worked really hard. And, of course, there were a lot of sidewalks and such to cut around with a hand clipper in those days, too. And then I also found, between the street and the sidewalk, some stepping stones, which had been pretty well overgrown. So I cut all around those, and I still remember Aunt Edith calling Uncle Gus, come on out and look what Kenny has done. He's uncovered and uncovered our stepping stones. Half a century ago, and it's still here. And I find I talk with lots of people and say, I can still remember when so-and-so said this or did this for me a long time ago. You don't know how long your words will stick and how much benefit they will give to other people if you are positive in that area. Cynthia Parsons, I think, is one of the editors of the Christian Science Monitor. And she tells one experience with a teacher when she was trying to identify who was had the greatest impact upon her. Greatest teacher she had, she said, no matter how dumb a question was, this teacher always acted as if it were a good one. In fact, her goal was that students have more dignity after they've asked a question than before they've asked it. She also challenged students by asking some in the room to help others with their problems. I remember one day, Parsons goes on, I heard a student who was the class brain ask the teacher how to work out a graph of an equation. She just turned to me with one of her choice smiles and asked if I'd mind showing him how cleverly I had done the problem. You know, I can still hear her saying that word cleverly. That was the first time anyone had ever called me clever, and I liked it. Her expectations gave me a new self-confidence, helped redirect my goals in my life. Anyone else had similar expectations laid on them by teachers? Anyone had low expectations laid on them by teachers?
I can tell you both. I was doing it. I had to take chemistry. And I had a teacher that was a new beginner, and I think he thought he had the world by the tail.
Mm-hmm.
He disciplined me with sarcasm. Not that he had to.
Discipline with sarcasm. That
we
hurts.
And my name is Lyra.
Pardon me, they can't hear upstairs. A little louder.
My name is Lyra. He called me Lydia, and he would ask me a question, and if I didn't know, oh, Lydia doesn't know anything today.
Well,
thank goodness, I have another teacher, Miss Berg, Miss Strum, and I took higher algebra from her, and solid geometry, and she encouraged me,
mm-hmm.
So I had the two in my junior year. Hadn't I had Miss Strum, I don't know what I would have done.
The first teacher who said, hey, you don't know anything today, could have kind of killed your enthusiasm and drive and feelings of self-confidence, and the other one made up for it, yeah. It's amazing what we can do in the lives of other people, and we pass them by oftentimes and don't think that they may be needing. The second teacher didn't know it, but she certainly helped a person in need, yeah. I also had, people can be negated in another way. I had a teacher in high school who was a social studies teacher, and the only ones that really counted in class were the athletes. And she had, you know, about four or five of them sitting up near the desk here, and the rest of us who weren't athletes, and all the girls in those days, we could sit there if we didn't disturb the important things, you know, going on up here. Okay, I've got a question here. Which is more effective and helpful, written or spoken affirmation? Someone tell you something or someone give it to you in writing?
Writing.
Why Everett in writing?
Well, you always have it to refer to.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a good point. And I find from my experience, okay, I'll tell one right now. I used to write notes of appreciation to teachers and to students who had done well. Then a teacher retired in Portland when I was in Corvallis or Eugene. I happened to notice in the paper I wrote a note to her about this and so on. She wrote back and she said, nice to hear from you. She said, I still have the notes of appreciation you wrote, you know, 15 years ago. And I've had other people say, hey, I have saved your note, and when things are dark and gloomy and dreary, I pull it out and read it. So Everett's right on that. We tend to save them. And I realized when this lady said that I had, well, I also met a former high school student about 2 weeks after I'd written to her and got her letter back. And he said, hey, I still have a note of appreciation or something you'd written to me. And I thought that's strange because two people responded that way in 2 weeks. And then I realized I have a file where I keep a few of those notes too. But I don't have any of my check stubs for those years. Some things are just much more important than others. Okay, there is a phrase that says, if you don't like what I do, tell me. If you like what I do, tell the boss.
Yeah.
Now, on that theory, when Lois went to the hospital about 10, 12 years ago, I was with her, and the admitting clerk at Sacred Heart did a beautiful job. Because that's a, you know, a sensitive spot. You can make people feel better or worse by the way you act. So I took her name, and I didn't just tell her she'd done well, but I took her name and I wrote to the lay administrator of Sacred Heart Hospital. About 2 weeks later, I got a letter from the lady saying, that's a nice thing you did. What you don't know is that my husband is an invalid in a wheelchair. I'm the sole support of the family. I've been on the house cleaning crew for years and just had a chance for promotion to the admission desk. Now, if I had
you know, even sent the note to her, she couldn't send it up the flagpole. But starting there, a number of people say, hey, we got to find employees. So that's probably one example, and I could give you a number of examples where people are pleased to have it go somewhere else. Incidentally, to give you one idea of how few probably positive letters go into some management areas, Eastern Airlines for a while would give the family of an employee a free trip if a letter came in praising an employee by name. If you know that got to be well known, they couldn't lie.
I worked for the post office, and we've gone through 5 bosses in 3 years. And we had one boss, and she not only spoke, she did the writing and sent those in. And the ones that she sent the names in on acknowledging the good work, got $500.
Wow.
too expensive
a boss, huh?
But it took, some were there 20 years, 30 years. We had 3 of them retire in 1 year, but
they, yeah.
Bless her, yeah, she was still there while they were there, so they got the red rule.
Maybe nobody
will
note for her.
That's the problem.
Could be.
Yeah,
we
did. But.
Well, I worked 10 years one place before the dean wrote a letter to me saying, you know, you've been doing a good job. And he also kind of probably excused himself by saying, I'm taking a leaf out of your book, saying, you know, like, I might not have done this by myself. And I had worked just as hard years, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, really nothing to take home and say, hey, Lois, look at this. So it is helpful sometimes.
You know, you should never put a but in those letters, though. We always had a saying that nothing counts after it was written prior to the but.
And don't say you're doing a good job, but.
Yeah. Okay. You know, a lot of people believe the way to write a letter is to say a few good things.
Oh, if you were going to write a reprimand or something.
Yeah. Say a lot of good things before you kind of load a boom. Say.
Yeah. That's ulterior motive.
And the old saying is that nothing counts that was said before the but.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, of parents, you know, a child comes home with a report card of, what, 4 A's and 1 B. What's wrong? You know, what happened here? What's wrong? You know, shall we go and talk to the teacher? We tend to emphasize that.
But as a teacher in a grade school, I find spoken affirmation is very good. It's instant energy to that youngster.
Okay.
And you don't have to, you know, tell the others they aren't doing so good. If you just mention.
Oh, I think that's great. You're saying that the spoken information is kind of instant energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying we should not do the oral at all. I thank you for that because it might be misleading. But if it's something that's, you know, over a period of time, then something of this nature can be kept and retained. Yeah. A lay worker at Grace Lutheran in Corvallis was in a seminar, and she told me afterwards, I guess she wrote a note to me, said she'd made a resolution to write a note each week, one a week, during the next year to someone who had been an inspiration to her. And she said, when the year rolls around, I'll have written 52, and maybe I'll extend it to 2 years. I checked with her later to find out what she had done. She said, well, she'd written about half the time. But, she said, almost all the people responded in one way or another. Many approached me with tears in their eyes after they received a note. They couldn't quite believe that they had made a contribution to my life. With many, a deeper and closer relationship was developed. My notes opened the doors for a new friendship and so forth. And she said, I have these impressions. People need to feel worthwhile. It nourishes them to hear that they have made some contribution for good in the lives of others. Praise has a profound effect when it is written. It takes more effort to compose a note or a letter, but the person receiving it can read it again and again and enjoy the recognition for an indefinite period of time. Again, tying in with what was said there. Okay, a few miscellaneous points here. I've got potential activity for November 1st to 24th. You may or may not like the idea. But a number of years ago, I started trying to write a note of appreciation, one a day, starting around the 1st of November, and then mailing them the Monday of Thanksgiving week. And I just date them, for example, Thanksgiving 1985. I think those notes mean 20, 30, 40 times as much as a Christmas card that's signed Joel or, you know, Mary. Because you've taken some time and you've expressed appreciation to some people who may not be getting it any other place. You can think about that. You can try it as an experiment if you wish to. Then also, let's see, Church Appreciation Day. Following out some of this thinking, we tried our, I don't know if it's first annual or first and last, Appreciation Day at church about 2 months ago, I guess it was. Between the services, and we had the first service cut a little short and the second one start 10 minutes late or something, we went to the social hall from both services, people were invited, had the round tables, coffee, cookies, paper and pens. And we had explained already what it was about. And people were invited to write notes of appreciation to volunteers and others who they, you know, have forgotten to say anything for. There was one nice, very nice lady. For I don't know how many years she has baked the communion bread. I'd say maybe 12 years. And she didn't even know, she kind of confided to a friend, I don't know if anybody even knows I bake the communion bread. Well, Vera got a number of notes that day. Appreciation for doing that. You should see the smile on the life in that as a result. And a number of the people who were on the committee planning this were busy, so they wrote notes at home beforehand and brought them. And they all went into a barrel, and we saw that they were put together and mailed out to the people. We didn't want them, you know, sitting around saying, oh, you got two, I got one. So, and they were mailed out. Now, possibly someone got left out, I don't know, but we tried in the planning ahead to cover all the bases. You may wish to consider that. Down here it says, the last persons we praise, and a blank line. Who are the last persons we praise?
The ones closest to us.
Right, the ones closest to us. Yeah. It's like we heard this morning at Bible study about the man said it was about his wife. Well, you married me for better or for worse, didn't you?
You got it.
Yeah. Or the wife who said, yeah, you know, you've never told me you love me since we've been married. Look, he said, I told you I loved you when we got married. If anything changes, you'll be the first one to know. I'm thinking of the fellow who was in a seminar where they were talking about giving praise and appreciation to those close to you, and he'd forgotten that, you know, he realized he had not been doing anything in relation to helping and remembering his wife. So he kind of overdid it. He bought candy and flowers and went home, you know, and knocked on the door, and wife opened, looked at him, broke out crying. Oh, he said, what's wrong? Everything's gone wrong today. The dog ran through the screen door, the washing machine broke down, Billy fell off the bicycle and banged up his knee badly, and now you come home drunk. That's kind of sad in a way, isn't it? We go to a restaurant, possibly, and the food is very good. And we might say, you know, give my compliments to the chef, to the cook. Or when we're in the restaurant, we may say, my, that was excellent service, you know, to the waitress, and give a generous tip. And sitting across the table to somebody who has prepared 7,000 meals that maybe we haven't thanked for any of them. And what kind of an example, then, are we setting for other people in this regard? Any comments in this area that you'd like to share? Yes?
I have a friend that finally one evening we were sitting...
Just loud enough so they hear you upstairs, too.
I have a friend we were asked over for dinner, and after the meal, she, you know, my husband and I thanked her, and she said, asked her husband why he never said anything, and he says, well, if it was bad, he says, you'd be the first to know it. I wouldn't eat it, but if I eat it, why do you, that's to show that he liked it. That should have been enough.
Silence does not equate with appreciation, does it? No. No. Okay, remember what Proverbs 3:27 was again? Something like, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Huh? We have here in the village, I don't know how many volunteer workers, some we see. Huh? We see the waitress, we see the bus drivers, we see the person in the post office and such as that. And or the registrar, and I was talking to June here the other day, she said, we get quite a bit of positive comments. She said, particularly from the group that's here now. I don't know whether we are more mellow when we are mature or not. But anyway, she said she appreciated that, and she's in one of those spots of the scene. But then we have a lot of people who might be behind the scenes. You know, who cleans the toilet? Who washes the sheets and the towels? On and on and on. Who cuts the wood that they burn in the wintertime? Who fixes the electric power when it goes off? And on, as it does sometimes, and so on. So I went over to June at the registrar's office, and I asked her for the names of the people on these various crews. And she kindly gave me the names of the people and the names of the crews. I have here, for example, housekeeping. Those who, you know, are vacuuming and sweeping and cleaning the bedrooms, and I don't know, you know probably more what they do than I do. With a few names on a little piece of paper here and a slip on the top that can be pulled off. Then I have carpentry, you know, there's a carpentry crew and a few names there. And the cooks. And some of those cooks get up pretty early, I think. And from our room, I know I can see the laundry windows. And when I get up in the morning, no matter what time it is, there's somebody in the laundry, and you see the sheets, you know, flying around. They're working there. But even somebody makes a computer mailing list so we can all be kept informed. And there's a fire chief. I have about 14 pieces of paper here with these things. My wife in the balcony has four. Up there of different ones. The question is, are you willing, enough of you, to accept one of these, and maybe you gather a little group and write on here to the housekeeping crew, Beth Eifert is the head of it and such, and hey, we appreciate your work, and then, you know, sign it here or take it to the table and have several people add their names on the bottom. And then Gloria Baker's desk is right in off the dining room. She's the secretary to our director, huh? And it could be just laid there. She'll see that it gets on. Now, if there are enough people who are willing to do this, great. If there aren't, we probably shouldn't do some and not the other. How many people would be willing to take one? Can we get 14 hands down here and four upstairs or not? 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Hey, it's, you know, that's great. It's nothing difficult. You know, maybe you just say thank you for all your good work, girl. I don't care what it is. But if you'll do it, I think it'll mean a lot to the people.